I didn't really know what I wanted to do or where I wanted to go. Realized that it's okay to change the majors. I'm willing to work as hard as it is to get to where I want to be.
This is Alicia, and welcome to the College Life Podcast. The College Life Podcast is here to provide you with ideas on how college students can design their life, be mindful and intentional about what they're doing while they're in college. We will also interview people who have already graduated from college, who currently work at a college, and current college students. Each guest will share their story, their struggles, their successes, and offer you tips on how to take ownership and make the most of your time while you're in college. Let's get to it. Hey, it's Alicia with the College Life Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today. I know that you could spend your time doing so many other things, and you are joining me, so I really appreciate that. In this episode, I interview a college senior who is graduating in May. He actually will be a college graduate by the time you hear this. And he's also a class president. His name is Kavion. In this episode, we get real, and I'm so excited about that. And we talk about moving away from home, transferring from a community college to a four-year college. We talk about how to deal when things don't go as planned, societal pressures. We talk about money, trying to find a job, and overcoming fear. This interview is so good, and I cannot wait for you to hear it. So let's go ahead and get started. Welcome to the College Life Podcast. Today I have with me Kavion, and he's going to talk a little bit about his college experience. So
thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got to college?
Yeah, so I am a first generation college student from a lower income family. I'm from Paris, Texas. I did a year at a junior college in Paris, and then I transferred to UNC after my freshman year. I now study international affairs with a political economy emphasis and minors in Africana studies and economics. Yeah, I know a lot. while I've been a student here, I've been involved in various clubs and orgs. Right now, I work at the Office of Financial Aid on campus, and I serve as student body president. So I occasionally cater with our UNC catering program. That was actually my first job on campus, and I just kind of continued working there thereafter. So,
yeah, awesome. Well, tell me a little bit about why did you decide to go to college initially? So when you first went to the junior college that you were talking about.
Yeah, so I would say it was kind of expected, always expected from like my family, and it worked so hard to make sure that my brother and I could both go to college. And yeah, so I just kind of felt like it was a norm, even in our society. I kind of feel like, you know, we're expected to go to college. But for me, it wasn't really until my senior year of high school when like I knew I wanted to go to college versus just like expected to go to college. And yeah. I really started focusing on classes as I was an upperclassman in high school, started to realize what I wanted to do in life, or at least I thought I had a vision of what I wanted to do. And I started just taking the steps towards those goals. So like I said, I did a year at a junior college because originally, it's a long story, but I guess to cut it short, I had joined the military my senior year of high school, and I was going to be in the National Guard. And we had a military base in my town. So once a month, National Guard is like reserve. So once a month, we were expected to go to this military base and do like a weekend training. And it was kind of like a pre-basic training. So I would go there once a month during my senior year. And then June, the month right before I graduated high school, I got discharged for medical reasons. I found out that I had asthma. And because of that, like, the military, they didn't want to, like, pay to send me to basic training when I was already kind of, like, a defect, you know?
Dang.
So I had applied to, like, all these different colleges for the spring semester. Cause I was like, okay, you know, I'm going to be at basic training in the summer and even throughout the fall. So, like, I couldn't start college in the fall. And once that happened, once I got discharged, it was like, what do I do now? And I was like, okay, you know, I don't want to sit out for seven semester, so my only option is going to junior college. And I was kind of like hesitant of doing it at first, but once I actually got to the junior college, like I realized, wow, like this is a great way to save money. This is still a really good education. I'm getting to like ease into like the college life and learn about how to like balance classes, how to balance like, you know, other priorities as well as being a college student. So I would say my time at junior college was really beneficial for me, and it made me want to continue going to school, and it also helped me figure out, like, okay, I don't want to do business, but I want to still, like, in some way affect the international world. And that's when I came to UNC, started out as international business. I realized again, okay, I don't want to do business at all. So I switched to international relationships, or international relations, and continue with that. So
great. So tell me a little bit about your transition from the community college to UNC. So I guess, what was that process like? And then how did you choose UNC out of all the schools?
Yeah, so it's a funny story. So I really didn't have a game plan while being at the junior college. I didn't really know what I wanted to do or where I wanted to go. I was looking at a school that was still within Texas that, I don't know, I guess would have kind of kept me in my comfort zone because it wasn't too far away. A lot of people from Paris went there for school, and also I was getting really good scholarships from this school, so I was looking at that school as an option. And my brother, he had actually did a semester here at UNC, and he followed his girlfriend here because she's from Colorado. He had came back home for a semester and did a year at the junior college for financial reasons, and he was like, hey, you should come back to Colorado with me. And I just went out on a whim. It was like, okay, like, let's go to Colorado.
Yeah.
Didn't know anything about UNC, Greeley, really Colorado,
yeah.
And just kind of, took a chance and fell in love with the school after a while.
Yeah. Were you scared at all? I feel like a lot of students, when they're in that decision-making process, like, oh, well, I could just stay here in my comfort zone, or I could, try something new, looking at it almost as an adventure. Let's see what happens. You know, how do you go about doing that? I think that there's a lot of pressure for, like, especially college students to be like, what do you want to do? Where are you going? Like, why are you making that decision? There's a lot of judgment, I think, from like societal. So did you have to deal with any of that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think in a moment I was extremely nervous about the decision I had made to like move to Colorado. Like, we literally didn't secure an apartment until 2 weeks before we were moving there. And I was actually like out of the country. I was in Africa. So I was freaking out. Like, I was all nervous and stuff. And looking back on it now, I was like, dang, I was kind of like dumb for like just making this decision to move to a whole new state, not knowing how I was going to pay for like school and stuff. And like, luckily I stayed faithful, and God just really provided. Like, by the time like the semester started, I had finally made it to Colorado. We didn't know the location of our apartment, but it turned out it was like right beside the university center. So it was like pretty much on campus. And then, I found out I didn't know anything about financial aid either. So I didn't even know I was going to pay for the like college. Turned out like my financial aid really took care of my first year, you know, scholarships, grants. And I still ended up taking out loans, but I didn't need them. And it was just like, I didn't need it for the lease paying for the university, but I still needed to help adjust to moving and stuff. And like, that was just such a blessing to happen. But like I said, looking back on it, I was probably not the wisest for making that decision, but hey, it came to fruition. And
yeah, it will pay off in the long run too. So, well, I have so many things of where I want to go with this conversation. So financial is a huge part of college students, a barrier to student success. It's a barrier to like get into college because you have to know all these different elements of the process. And if you are first generation, I was just doing, I'm kind of working on a presentation, and I'm talking about the social and cultural capital of the impact that has on a student or a person. Yeah. So thinking about if all of your parents, friends went to college, they went to college, the resources that you have access to are so different.
That is very true.
You know?
Just thinking about that, because like, yeah, those people may have connections within like different schools, or like even knowing how to like, I guess, like, how do I put it? Them knowing how to like just express those resources to you.
Yes,
and like, you know, like for me, like being a first generation student, like my parents couldn't even help me fill out the financial aid application. They knew nothing about it, weren't involved. And, you know, even the application process of applying to schools, they were not involved. And it wasn't because they didn't want to be involved. It was just because they didn't know how to be, and they didn't know anything about the process. So, yeah, I can definitely see how that would affect students or potential students.
Yeah, and my parents didn't go to college either. Mm-hmm. And so they were so supportive, like, yes, go to college. But it was kind of like, I was like, Dad, can you help me fill out the FAFSA? Yep. And he's like, what does this mean? I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's so different.
I feel like we probably guessed on a lot of things.
Yeah, same. I was really nervous after. Right. I was thinking the police were going to come to my door or something and arrest me. But
it's so scary. Yeah, but So it's so interesting to think about. You know, you said you didn't know anything about financial aid. Mm-hmm. And now you work in the financial aid office.
Still struggling.
So, well, yeah. So knowing what you know now, and all the challenges that students experience with money, and you are not a representative of the office currently right now for this podcast, so this is just your perspective. Mm-hmm. But what do you think is the missing link, or if you have any insight?
That is a great question. Especially at our university, I feel like we do provide the resources, and you know, our financial aid office and also like our admissions teams, they try to go out to these places where the demographics of students are like those from those lower income families, right, or those first generation families. I feel like we really try to inform students and inform families of like financial aid and how aid affects you and whatnot. And I don't know, I still feel like there's some type of gap that we're missing because, you know, when students come to school, they're still not understanding their financial aid. And like, likewise, like, you know, I remember being at my junior college and just kind of accepting everything because I thought that's what I was supposed to do.
Yeah.
And then not realizing that later it might affect me. I might be in debt. Yeah, I wish I had an answer for that.
No.
I feel, so I actually, back in December, I don't know if you know, but I went to D.C. to meet with the Gates Foundation to talk about like the barriers to securing financial aid.
Mm.
And I actually got to meet Bill Gates and sit down with him. Yes, at like a table probably like smaller than this with three other students. Yes, and it was really exciting. I'm not really supposed to be talking about it yet, but it comes out in like 5 days. So
this will be after.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, so it will come out, and hopefully they, at that point, we'll have some really cool initiatives and things surrounding like financial aid of how to like attack just students securing the resources and better understanding financial aid. But one thing that like I really focused on when I went to sit down with them was like working in the financial aid office. I feel like a lot of students who went through the process of verification didn't really realize what they were doing. And there were there's so many documents. When you go through verification, there's so many documents you have to submit. It's real easy to like submit the wrong thing or to like just not finish it because you didn't know what you were supposed to put. And then you get more and more documents.
You're delayed, yes. And then you're delayed again. And then you don't have your access to money.
Exactly. And by the time you need that money, it's already the middle of the semester when you needed your books and stuff like that. And if you're a lower income student, you probably have to, if you didn't get those books, you probably don't have a way to get those books without financial aid.
And then you're not going to get them by the middle of the semester.
Yes, it's too late.
You have your...
You're tired of focusing in class by that point. Yeah, so...
Yeah. Oh, that is such a cool opportunity, though. And I think it's amazing because you can share your own personal experience, but then you also have this extra knowledge of what you're seeing in the financial aid office. And, you know, we don't have... It's not going to be a solution. It's not going to be an easy task, I think, to fix, but... Definitely. We have to do something with it.
We have to, definitely. Yeah, I just encourage universities to continue reaching out to those demographics where people really are not understanding what financial aid is or like the effects it can have, and you know, continue to use the admissions office financial aid ambassadors to go out and like, you know, give workshops or even like if universities have the resource or any college or institution, if they have the resources, like, you know, press into like doing one-on-one, or whether that's like having financial aid experts like do that one-on-one, or having like maybe another like budgeting type office or finance type office like help people understand financial aid would be very beneficial for students and families.
Yeah, and I think if you are listening to this as a student, doing everything you can to connect with the financial aid office early and often you have questions.
Yes.
And I would argue that most institutions want to help students, but they don't necessarily have the resources to be going and meeting students one-on-one all day, every day. So hopefully, you know, this is a very blanket statement, but hopefully most institutions are trying to help you. They actually want you to come to their institution and stay. And if financial is a barrier, going to that office multiple times to try and figure out what are some ways that you can get more support, whether it be financially, working on campus, et cetera. So,
definitely.
Yeah.
I would say definitely for students, you know, do your own research. Go to websites like studentloans.gov and learn more about what a grant is and what a Pell Grant is and the different various types of loans, because, you know, it's so easy just to, like, you know, accept everything that's offered to you, but you may not even need that. And, you know, think about, right now having a refund or whatever looks good to you, but in the future, like, you're going to pay that cost and have, like, don't go into debt, basically. So do your research.
I definitely could have been better at decision making. It's all right. Which is why we're telling you to do better.
Yeah, self-care. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about your major.
Okay.
So at the beginning you were talking about the community college and moving and then transferring, and you were like you weren't sure where to go or what to do or what you wanted to do. And then you kind of mentioned business, I think, in there.
Yeah, so it's a lot of things.
Okay, so you've kind of been interested in a lot of things, and now you're a senior about to graduate. So how did you get to where you are now as far as major and career interests?
Yeah, so going into my freshman year of college, I wanted to be a cinematographer. So, you know, I expected to do this year at a junior college, get some general classes out of the way, and then go to, like, cinematography school somewhere. But within that first year, I also filmmaking was a passion of mine, but also the world in general. I really had a passion for, like, the world and international affairs. As I did that year at a junior college, I was like, okay, you know, I'm kind of interested in business, so maybe I can, like, mix international relations with, like, business. So I went to UNC trying to focus on international business, and real quickly I learned that, like, I didn't care about transactions and, like, multinational companies. And then I found out that UNC had an international relations program, so I switched to international affairs with a focus in Africa and the Middle East.
Okay.
And because I have a passion for Africa specifically. But yeah, I switched to that major. And then I found out that, okay, like, I took some econ classes, realized I really started to like econ. So I started double majoring in Africa, international affairs with an African Middle East emphasis, and international economics, which really kind of sounds like the same thing, right?
A different perspective.
Yeah, different perspectives.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did that. And then I realized, okay, with this international affairs, Africa and the Middle East focus, like, there's really not a lot of classes in the Middle East. We only had one course at the time that really focused on the Middle East. So I found out about the political economy emphasis within international affairs. And then I talked to my advisor, and he was like, you know, political economy, international affairs, political economy, and doing a double major with international economics, you're kind of doing the same thing. So, like, you're going to kill yourself taking all these classes every semester, and then senior year have to take, like, these capstones. And by the time I had, like, changed these majors, like, I was already a junior, so I was going to have to take, like, so many courses to graduate on time. And he was just telling me, like, maybe if you would have did this earlier, it would have been better or easier for you. But, like, you know, at this point, you'll just be better doing the international affairs with a political economics economy emphasis with minors in Africa and minors in economics. So I know that was a lot, like, but you know, that's honestly, I would probably say that's the typical student who, like, just trying to figure out what they really want to do, what do they want to graduate with, and trying to figure that out. And I would encourage any student to, like, really realize that it's okay to change your majors. I would recommend, that's part of college, you know, figuring out what do you want to do in life. And, you know, you may come in, I know people who have, you know, come to college with a nursing major, or, you know, as a pre-nursing student their freshman year, then by the end of it change to, like, accounting or something like that. And that's okay. Like, that's part of, you know, learning. Like, once you start taking these classes, you will really start to figure out what you want to do. I recommend trying to, your early years, like your underclassmen years, freshman and sophomore, while you have all these, like, university-wide credits, try to take something and take a course in something that, like, maybe you feel like you're interested in, but it's not, like, specifically within your major. That way you can figure things out early on, so you're not, like, you know, here at the end, your senior year, trying to, probably about to go into a fifth year or whatnot. But also, that's okay to be a fifth year student. Yep. It's becoming common. So.
Yeah, and honestly, the statistics are ridiculous on that. I think it's, I don't really want to throw a number out because now I'm, I don't want to be wrong. Or, I mean, not wrong, but I don't want to say the wrong information. Yeah. And maybe I'll do a podcast on that later, but it's pretty low with the 4-year graduation
rate.
Yeah. Because nationally, it's like 59% is a 6-year graduation.
Uh-huh.
So only 60% of students who start college finish in 6 years. a four-year degree.
That is crazy. And I also don't want to misspeak, so I won't throw out numbers. But I remember being at a Board of Trustees meetings not too long ago, and we were talking about graduation within the four-year and versus the six-year. And it was like the six-year graduation was much higher than a four-year. So
Yeah,
mm-hmm. So that's interesting to see that, like, yeah, like 5 to 6 years has become the norm now, you know?
Yeah, because life happens mm-hmm. too. And exactly. Sometimes you got to take care of yourself.
Yeah,
you know?
You do. And like I said, you know, a lot of people change majors and sometimes it puts you behind. So, and it's fine. And I wouldn't even call that behind, actually. It just, you know, puts you on a different course. And that's fine.
I love that. It's so true. It's not just behind. It's just, actually, you're just pivoting. You're just making a change that you know you need to make.
And exactly.
I think so many students are afraid to change their major because they have this identity with this one major even sometimes. Mm-hmm. So when I was in college, I was like, oh, I'm going to be a teacher. As soon as I started feeling like that wasn't right, I was like, for lack of a better word, like, oh, shit.
Yes.
Like, I had no idea what I was going to do because it was my junior year. And I'm like...
And that was your identity by this
yes,
point.
Yes, yes. For literally ever since I could remember, 3 years old, 4 years old.
Wow.
I wanted to be a teacher because I loved playing with books. And it's so interesting because now I'm in education, but a completely different area.
Yeah.
So, you know.
What made you figure out that you didn't want to be a teacher? What was the click for you?
Yeah, so it's really interesting because I wanted to be a teacher, and I had done all the right things, quote unquote, that you're supposed to do to figure out what you want to do for your mm-hmm. life. So I had interviewed teachers, I had shadowed, I had volunteered. I cared about the job and the field, but when I started actually getting into the major classes, my first semester, my junior year,
mm-hmm.
I really felt like closed in, like I can't do this for the rest of my life.
Wow.
And it just hit me. And so sometimes you can even do all the right things, and then it's the timing. The timing comes, and it's actually not what you want to do.
Wow.
And that's okay, you know? And
yeah, it definitely is.
I tried to change my major to business. So I was working out as a bartender and as a waitress at the time. And my supervisor said, hey, if you get your bachelor's degree, once you get your bachelor's degree, you can work for us. We think you're really great at this. And I love hospitality and just making people feel welcomed mm-hmm. and customer service. And it's my strong suit. So I tried to start that major. And they were like, well, you don't have the prereqs. So you're better off just getting a bachelor's degree in something else and then going for a bit something in hospitality. Because mm-hmm. you really don't necessarily need a degree in hospitality to be a manager or to kind of move your way up in the restaurant business, at least that's what it was. That's what they told me back in the day. So it could be different now. But yeah, I was like, well, what am I going to do now? So I literally like went online, looked at all the majors that FSU had to offer and started crossing things off of like, yeah, not chemistry. That's not for me. And I saw family and child sciences and I was like, I have no idea what I'm going to do with this, but I love families and kids.
Uh-huh.
And this kind of goes to kind of the next question too. So I had no idea what I was going to do after college. So you were about to graduate. So
don't remind me. The stress, the cloud of stress just like came back to me.
Oh no,
we were having a really good conversation and you brought up graduation. No, I'm just
kidding. So the emotions are raw right now. Perfect. So it is so hard. Like life is hard and mm-hmm. you can do all the right things and sometimes it doesn't work out the way that you want, like the next step for you, you know? So where are you at in your process when it comes to like, do you have your life figured out now that you're about to graduate college?
Yeah. Let's be transparent. To be honest, like I'm probably at a stage of like frustration right now, kind of getting over the frustration because, you know, like, everything happens in due time. But to be honest, like I really felt like I had a plan of action figured out. Like I knew I wanted to go into government or go into like policy work after college. And I feel like I worked really hard, like on my resume and to like just really promote myself and make myself look good. I had a LinkedIn with over 500 people. Like I feel like I would
like, I've got connections.
Yeah, I got the connections and like, you know, I've honestly, probably since like last summer, going into my senior year, like I worked real hard to try to build connections and network with people. And like, I won like student body president election. And I did an internship at State Capitol. And these are all.
You met Bill Gates.
Met Bill Gates. And like, honestly, these are all like things at the end of the day, you know, I feel like, I don't know how to put it. You know, I guess in the beginning, I took a lot of pride in my resume. And, you know, not to, like, sound, like, cocky or anything like that, but I was just really, like, prideful in my resume. And, like, oh, I worked so hard to, like, make myself look good and make myself look presentable and whatnot. And I feel like I'm applying in Minnesota. So my fiance and I, we're getting married in September. And we...
Congratulations.
That's where, thank you. I appreciate that. That's where she's from. So we, that's where we, you know, want to start our marriage out. And so we've both been applying to jobs in Minnesota. And I feel like I'm just, like, really getting overlooked. Jobs that I really thought I would be, you know, high candidate for. Those companies either, like, didn't even email me back or, you know, just send me an email saying we moved on to other candidates or, you know. And even, like, I would say that was the most frustrating part for me because, like, you're not even giving me an interview. You know, like, I understand, like, if you turn me down after, like, realizing maybe over the phone you don't really like my personality or something like that. But it's just, like, I feel like I worked so hard for the, in that resume. And I guess in a way that's something that I kind of, what's the word, I guess valued, or not even valued, but made kind of like a god in my life, you know, of like, oh, like I really want to build myself up and like I look to this as getting me a job when, you know, as they say, like it's all about building connections and, you know, there's more to it than just a resume. And I'm starting to learn that and like also really trying not to be discouraged by like that, you know, of course, like you should work hard and, you know, me being from a lower income family, I honestly feel like I'm not even supposed to be here to graduate, you know? Mm-hmm. So like, I feel like that's just something like I'm really proud of to be able to come from nothing and like be here. But at the same time, that's not everything. My resume isn't everything. And I'm excited to actually like move to Minnesota, whether I have to get a job at Walmart or somewhere. Not that there's like any discredit to anybody that works at Walmart.
It's
but
definitely not your dream,
yeah,
right? You don't want to do that next,
exactly.
But you'll do it if you have
I'll
to.
I'll do it if I have to. And I'm like, yeah. I'm willing to work as hard as it is to get to where I want to be. And like, that goes beyond just like a resume and like college. You know, there's, I'm realizing, I'm sure like you've experienced it. Like there's, you know, after college, there's going to be hard times and there's going to be things that you have to work through. And, you know, you're not always going to get the job you want to do, but like, it's all about how hard you work and how hard you network and, you know, your drive to really get to where you want to be. It's not going to be easy. So I'm excited.
Yeah. Yeah. I really appreciate you just being transparent and open and talking about it, because I know that there are students listening to this or who will listen to this who need to hear it. And to also, I hope it doesn't scare them. But I hope it's, I want this to be real.
Yeah.
Like that's the point of this podcast, is so we can have real conversations. And so I really just appreciate your vulnerability in that. And I also want to tell you that you are such an incredible person. Seriously.
I appreciate
so
that.
Many people here, everybody knows you, like people, you know, and I have never heard one negative thing, you know,
well, that's
and
good. Thank you.
I'm just saying, so it's frustrating to me because, yeah, you've worked so hard and you've done so many things, both on paper, but then also just you as a person. I know that you've worked on yourself as a person and grown these past few years. So I want to acknowledge that.
Thank you. I really appreciate
that. Yeah, yeah. And just to encourage you to keep going. And if there's anybody out there in Minnesota who wants to hire.
Give your boy
saying.
A job. I can just send you my resume, anything. But truly, I appreciate that. And to the student, like, you know, I hope me saying that doesn't discourage you from like pursuing jobs or like, you know, thinking that graduation is going to be your peak or whatever. Just know that if you just keep driving and keep, of course, I'm not there yet either, but like, you know, it's all about the drive and like that, realize that, you know, I hope you get your dream job right out of college, but also you may not, and realize that that's okay. And it's not about where you start, but it's about where you finish. So, you know, just keep driving and you'll get to where you want to be as long as you don't give up. So I remember the other day you told me a little bit about like kind of your journey with going to the University of Maryland, right? And how your husband, he got a job in Maryland, but you hadn't
did
had one.
Not.
Yeah, you did not. So you, what was it? You worked at a winery?
Yeah. So I had, at the time I had my master's degree and I had worked for 3 years.
That is crazy to me.
Yeah. So we had just gotten married and my husband got an offer to go get his master's degree at University of Maryland. And it was an awesome opportunity for him. And sometimes when you have a relationship, there's like kind of give and take when it comes to kind of moving, like, hey, let's move for you.
Definitely.
And like, and it's also a good opportunity for us.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, it was such a cool experience. And it was so fun living near the D.C. area, and it was the first time I had moved away from Florida.
Really?
Yeah, so wow, it was a big deal. Yeah. I never thought that would happen. So, you know, life just kind of surprises you sometimes if you let it, and I loved it. So, yeah, I had started maybe March or April. I had started applying for jobs, and then we ended up moving in June to Maryland, and my husband started his job July 1. And I kept applying. I applied to probably 30 or 40 jobs at the time. And I was trying to be a little bit picky at first. And then I was a little bit less picky, which I encourage you to do as well as you're applying for jobs. But eventually it was kind of at the point where I had to have some kind of income to help out because we were, we had saved not quite a bit. I mean, it depends on
Your take on
how much money, but it was enough to give us a cushion. And when I left my job working, I got like $3,000 or $4,000 in vacation time that I hadn't used. Mm-hmm. And so that was so helpful. It's like, oh, okay, we're going to be fine. You know, $3,000 or $4,000 living in the DC area is super expensive. And it was a big cultural shift, financial shift as well. So we, and then I also had been saving and he had too, and, we had gotten down to $1,000 in our savings account. Wow. And I mean, this was before we had been dwindling even when I was working and I was working 40 hours a week at a wine store and I had a blast and I had got like free wine. So that was kind of fun. But doesn't pay the bills. Yeah. You know, I can't show up to my landlord like with a bottle of wine. Like, here you go. So it was really scary. And like, I can remember having two chairs in our living room and it was like the cheap little plastic chairs and just, you know, chilling.
And that's part of it though.
Trying to make it work. Yeah. But it's so interesting because I think a lot of times we're like, oh, you're going to find a job. It's going to be fine. And that's the narrative. And part of that is probably coming from a good place because we believe in you. Like, obviously we believe in you and we think that that's going to happen, right? It's positive. Mm-hmm. We know it's going to happen, but it's about when and where and all those things. And I had the same thing. So, you know, my third year in this program and I had done really well and people were like, yeah, you're going to be great. It's going to be fine. Not everybody's going to want you, but kind of like, oh, you're going to be, you know, such a competitive applicant. And it was kind of reality check. Like, actually,
yes,
maybe not. And so, yeah, you have to try to like hustle and try to figure it out. And, you know, we did eventually. And now we're in such an awesome place. And it took a while. It took, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, something like that.
Yeah.
And now like we're super blessed to be in the situation that we're at, but you know, I'm about to have to start applying for jobs in the next few months. So it's kind of nerve wracking again. And then we're limiting our space. So that's another thing too. If you can expand your search at all, that's awesome. But sometimes you can't. We want to stay in Colorado if possible. So that limits things. And then So anyways.
Can I ask you another question?
Yeah.
So you talked about, obviously you talked about like it was a reality check for you. And I know like for me as well, it's been a reality check to realize like, okay, like I'm not going to get a job right out of college. Or like, you know, it's not that easy as I thought it was going to be. But and I'm just graduating with like my undergrad, but like, what was it like for you already having a master's and 3 years of experience? What was it like to like not get a job and, or not get the jobs like you wanted right away and to like have to like work at like that winery or that wine shop? What was it like sitting in there? Like what feelings did you feel?
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of feel like it's the same, to be honest.
Really?
Because I started applying to jobs that only needed a bachelor's degree, right? So like it's a bachelor's degree is the minimum is a bachelor's degree. So I'm like, okay, well I have 3 years of experience and a master's degree. So I have to be more competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't necessarily the case either. So I don't know. I really don't know the answer to that question. I think it has a lot of the same emotions.
Okay.
You know, this is something that I have talked about in another podcast, but, you know, believing in yourself already, like, am I good enough? Am I smart enough? I already have those questions.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you actually start feeling that from the outside world is telling you that again, like, actually, no, you're not good enough for this job.
Yeah.
You're not, you know, it does take a toll on you, I think.
Definitely.
Like, mentally. So, yeah.
I think, yeah, too. I found myself starting to, what's the word? I guess sell myself short to mm-hmm. be like, oh, maybe, like, you're not as good of a candidate as you think you are and or whatever. And that's not to say, like, be cocky, but at the same time, don't, like, devalue yourself just because you're not getting the job. Like, you know, stay confident, stay applying, and, you know, just keep working harder to get it. And that's part of it. Like, employers want to see that you're working hard to get a job, and the right job will come in the due time. So don't discourage yourself and don't devalue yourself.
Yeah, and I think it's about using the skills and the network that you have created.
Right.
So I think about just the resources. Mm-hmm. So here, you know, you were able to get involved in so many things, which we're going to talk about next. But how did you go about doing those things? You know, you don't just end up becoming the student government president.
Yeah.
That doesn't just happen. There are things that you have to do. And like, I never even knew that those things existed when I was an undergrad. Mm-hmm. And I went to a super big school, but I was like, oh, what the heck is that? And no idea, you know? Anyways, but the qualities and the skills that you've built in this, you know, if you can use that to get a job, so going to a networking event that you feel super uncomfortable, totally. You don't know anybody, again, you know, you just did that when you came here.
Yep.
Now you're going to have to do that again when you go to a new place.
Fish in a big pond.
Yeah, or do informational interviews. Have you done any of those in Minnesota, or like even just over the phone? Or
I have not.
Okay.
Have not.
Are you familiar with what that is?
Not really. Could you elaborate?
Yeah. So it's... And I don't know if this is probably not the technical terms or anything, but I don't care. This is like what's helped me out. It is just meeting people and learning more about different industries is just emailing random people and saying, hey, can I have 30 minutes or an hour of your time and get to know you and your path?
Okay.
How did you get to where you're at right now? So maybe it's a CEO of a company that you really admire and you want to know how are you able to instill these values in throughout your company? You know, you're asking all these powerful questions, and that's a way to get connected to people
mm-hmm.
too. So, but it's, you know, you don't go in with that intention of, hey, can you get me a job?
Yeah.
But what I found is that most people who are willing to meet with you are pretty genuine.
Mm-hmm.
Usually people who don't meet with you are probably people you don't necessarily want to meet.
True.
So,
yeah.
You know, you can email 11 people or 10 people. I don't know why I said 11. 10 people and say 6 of those people respond back. Those are the 6 people that you follow up with, and hopefully at least 4 or 5 you actually get to meet and you have coffee with. Maybe you buy them coffee, you know, or whatever. And you really just talk about their journey and learn more about them. And then you learn from their skills of like how they got a job or
mm-hmm.
whatever that you can use in your own life.
That's interesting because I have done that actually a couple
okay.
times. I didn't know that's what it was called, I did that last semester. There were some companies in Minnesota that like I was really interested in, and I reached out to like the person in their company who had the position that like I would love to
Perfect.
Work in one day.
Yes.
And you know, like kinda like you said, I just reached out, hey, like I would love to learn more about like this company and like how you got to the position you are in, and I actually got to talk to probably the handful of the people I like emailed. A lot of them reached back out, but also there were people that didn't reach back out. I mean, that's okay. Like the worst you can get is a no, you know, like that's not going to affect me really. So, like kind of like you said, I recommend doing that as well. Like even just like dry emailing people or whatever,
mm-hmm.
like the worst you can get is a no. And you know, the best you can get is a yes. And like, you can actually like follow up and have a conversation with that person and learn more from them. And obviously don't go into it with the intent of like, hey, can you give me a job? And like just learning more about them. And maybe that'd be like a great contact for you later on. So,
or a friend, you know, you're
going
to need to make friends.
Exactly.
Like...
yeah. Someone to hang out with. So outside of my wife, but I love her too. So.
And there's some people that I have really connected with and we actually still stay in contact. And
nice.
Then there's some that you never see again.
Yeah.
And
that's fine.
Yeah. So it's really interesting. And I would say also some of the meetings that I've had have helped me pivot my career a little bit and make a shift or think about things that I never thought or knew existed
mm-hmm.
before.
That's really cool. And I remember actually a few weeks ago from one of our board of trustees members, he gave me really good advice about just like connections and how, you know, maybe you'll connect with somebody today and you won't talk to that person again for like 20, 30 years or like see that person ever again. But like, you never know how like just connections and just having those resources will play out down the line. You may meet someone today who was a undergraduate college student that you're like, I don't know, connecting with, you know, just to talk more about job searches or whatever, or someone who's a grad student. But like, you know, 20, 30 years down the line, they may be the next president, you know, looking for, put people on their cabinet or something. So that's just cool to think about, you know, and, you know, just always, I always hear people say, make sure you, what's the term they use? When like following up with contact, oh, make sure you keep me in touch, like keep in touch with me. And I always like never know what that means. Like, do you want me to call you once a month or like say, hey? And then he also gave me good advice about like, no, it just means like, you know, if you're ever like, say you come back to Colorado at some point, like, you know, make sure you reach out just to connect if we're able to connect, or like, you know, just, you know, you'll figure out those relations and those connections and how like best to interact with them and whatnot. But yeah, I usually never know what that means.
Really?
Yeah, okay. Make sure you keep in touch.
Okay. So that's usually a good sign.
Yeah.
I can just tell you from my own experience. So I work with a lot of students. I've probably worked with like 800, I think, students one-on-one. So yeah, it's awesome. And it's been so fun and such a rewarding job the past, well, really my entire career. But I will do like something with that, and I'll say like, hey, like at the end of our kind of time, so at the end of the year or whatever our time together looked like, I'll say, hey, it's kind of up to you with this relationship, because sometimes I feel really connected to a student and then sometimes like maybe they don't feel the same way, you know. So I'm not going to be like reaching out to them and saying like, hey, you want to go grab coffee, I'd love to see how your life is going. You know, so I put it on the ownership of them. So kind of same concept. If I gave a presentation at the beginning of the year with Tobias, who is our assistant vice president.
Yeah, a long title,
isn't it? Of enrollment management student access. Yeah. So I was helping him do a presentation. It was like a quick little thing. And I said, if anybody wants to reach out and connect and talk, even just over coffee, I'll buy you coffee. So there was probably 100 students in that office or in that space. How many do you think responded to that?
10.
One.
One?
One followed up, and I connected with her. And we had such an amazing conversation. And, I mean, we just, like, connected in such a deep way. One. Out of 100. And we, so I left, like, all my business cards, you know, so they could have easy contact. And that's okay. But, like, also, that's actually reality with a lot of things. So when people say, hey, send me an email if you're more interested, they're not kind of just doing it. They're not going to tell you to do that if they don't want you to do that.
True.
So if you are the one who reaches out, and I would encourage you, if you go to a presentation or a conference or whatever and people say, hey, don't hesitate to reach out to me. If you do, you will be probably one of potentially five at the top at most who actually do it. And then who actually follow up and have the meeting is another small percentage, you know, and then the consistent follow up as well.
And that says a lot about you too. Like, that shows that like you really want to know more, you know, you're really interested and maybe you're really looking to get to the next level. So that's really cool. And that's good advice to me. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is hard though, because you don't want to take somebody else's time and all of that stuff. But usually people who are high up and who are in very stressful positions, they protect their time too.
True.
So they're going to tell you, hey, I can't meet in the next month, but hey, let's connect in June.
And they'll be real about it.
So yeah. Or they'll say, hey, I can't right now, but can you connect with me in 6 months?
Right.
And that's totally okay, you know? So
that's interesting.
Yeah. Just be open.
Yeah. I like that.
And again, it's about building relationships, and you just never know what's going to happen.
Know.
So we might work together one day.
We may. Who knows? Like, that's the crazy part about it. You never know what's going to happen in the future.
So I know one of the things that we kind of wanted to talk about was involvement. And it's obviously a really crucial thing for any student who goes to college, but not every student does get involved. So can you talk a little bit about why you decided to get involved and if you experienced any challenges kind of in the initial stages?
I would say when I transferred to UNC, like I said earlier, I didn't really know anything about UNC or Greeley. So I, outside of my brother, I pretty much had like no friends. And I had a job that I started working at on campus, which was UNC catering. So we would like cater events and stuff like that. And I would interact with people there and whatnot. But still, I just kind of went to class, went to work, and went back home. Didn't like really make genuine connections with people. And by the end of my first semester, it was Christmas break, and I was really homesick, ready to go back to Texas. And I would say I went back to Texas over Christmas break, and, you know, it was fun to be back home at the same time. Being from, like, a small town, nothing really changes, and you kind of realize, I really realized that, like, wow, like, you know, this isn't really home anymore, and people are all kind of the same. Nothing's really growing. Like, I don't really want to be here either, so went back to school, kind of just, like, stuck in this place of, like, changing, I guess, growing up, and, like, you know, feeling out emotions of, like, just growing up and moving away and not really feeling like you have a home anywhere. That was real hard for me. But then I got two new jobs on campus, working at the financial aid office and working at the campus recreation center. Through those jobs, I really started to just build friendships. And also, I started getting involved probably, back in the fall semester of, like, being a part of Best Buddies, which is an organization on campus and national known organization. I also started getting involved in some Christian ministries on campus and whatnot, and started to connect more with people after I came back from Christmas break, just because I was like, I guess in the beginning I was just ready to go home, but after going home I was just kind of ready to be back and, like, try to figure out something. And as I started to get more involved on campus, I really started to, like I said, find people that I really bonded with and find those places on campus where I really felt like I belonged. Mm-hmm. And that carried with me all the way up until now, like, of just, I would say, getting involved in student government. Like, I had to get elected as a counselor of my college, and that meant that, students had to vote for me. And because I had built up these connections in different pockets on campus, like the campus recreation center, these different clubs and orgs, and just in general, like, meeting people, a lot of people supported me in that. And likewise, when I ran for student body president, a lot of people supported me in that role as well, and voted for me. And I owe it all to, like, just getting involved. And, you know, I think I would recommend that to any student to, like, get involved, you know, whether you go to this university or whether you go to any college. Like, involvement will definitely have a beneficial impact on your college experience, or at least I hope it does. But I think there's also, it's easy to say get involved, but, like, the resources aren't always there for students. Sometimes, like, students aren't able to be on campus. Sometimes students don't have the time to get involved in clubs and orgs. But if you do, I highly recommend it.
Yeah, it's like, if you can, yes, then you should.
Yeah, if you can, then you should. You definitely should. It will have such a positive impact on you, or at least I hope it does, you know. So
were you nervous at all whenever you went to, or do you remember your first meeting that you went to by yourself?
I was, yeah. I think even to this day I still get nervous and going to new things, but
that's so interesting to hear. We gotta come back to that.
Okay. But yeah, I remember I went to Best Buddies club meeting, which is Best Buddies, they work with people with disabilities in the communities that they're in, and they just pretty much build friendships with those buddies and hang out with them and take them to events or whatever. And they also partner with the Special Olympics to, like, put on events and whatnot. So I remember going to the first event, or the first meeting, and I was the only guy in the room with, like, all these girls and stuff like that, and I was just nervous, and, like, also being a new, I'm sure some of them were new students as well, but just, like, another part of, I guess, my story is, like, I never lived on campus. So that was also part of the reason why I didn't really have friends at first, because, like, I would just go to class and then go back to my apartment. So going to this meeting, like, I also knew no one, and it was hard and just, yeah, scary.
Yeah.
Being around a room full of girls. So.
So you said that it didn't necessarily get easier, or you still get nervous? Did it get easier?
It definitely. I'm sorry. I should have clarified.
No, I just, I feel like, and it might not for every student, mm-hmm. but I do think the more that you do it, it at least feels a little bit better.
I think, yeah, it definitely got easier. And it's funny because I went from, like, this small town, knowing everybody in the small town, and, like, feeling like, oh, people knew me, and, like, I had friendships and relations that I had built up over, like, you know, 18 years, 19 years of life. And, you know, like I said, being from a small town, it's like everybody knows everybody. But then, like, I come to Greeley, Colorado, and some may not think that's a small town, but, like, I mean, a big town, but, like, for me, being from an even smaller town, like, I felt like a little fish in a big pond, and it was really nerve-wracking at first to try to like build friendships, especially not living on campus, having to like make more of an effort to like meet friends, because like I couldn't just stick around my roommates, you know. And even going to like the welcome week events, like I really just didn't even go to those because I didn't want, like, it was just scary. Like, everybody already got friends. And that's another thing too, is like I recommend to like any incoming freshman, like when you come to campus, it's gonna look like, I don't know, hopefully you will connect with your roommates right away, but like when you go to like those welcome week events, you're gonna see people like all like buddied up and friend, like they got friends and everything. And that's because like they may just be hanging out with their roommates, or maybe they know somebody already on campus. But like, don't let that discourage you. Just go up and say hi to somebody. I guarantee, as much as you're wanting to say hi to people and meet those people, they're probably wanting to say hi to you as well and meet you, because like everyone's just looking for friends at that point. So like, take advantage of that while you still can, while like you're all new and looking for that friendship. Like, take advantage of that. Don't be scared of it. So, yeah. And that's something I didn't do. I was scared. Now I look back on it and I'm like, dang, I should have did that.
Yeah. And just think about everybody else in that situation is probably really scared too.
Yeah, exactly.
But it doesn't feel that way when you're in the moment.
True. Very true. Yeah. In the moment, it just feels like, oh, like I'm a nobody. Everyone else has friends and like I'm over here by myself.
Yeah.
And that's the way it looks too. But like I said, like, you know, they all probably just met their roommates and they just met new people. So, you know, just go say hi, you know, just start the conversation. And maybe you're not that type of person who's like, and maybe you're not the type of person who like is an extrovert and like the person to go up to someone and say hi. And that's okay too. You know, like maybe I would recommend like starting at a smaller scale of like going to a club or going to an organization and like look for people who love to do the same thing as you. That may be an easier way to connect. So don't get discouraged, you know, your first week of college.
Yes, that is such a good idea to go somewhere that you already have a common interest.
Yeah,
have a common talking point.
There you
like
go.
Why you're interested in it.
There you go.
It's so easy. And I always, you know, tell students, like, always ask, hey, what's your name? And, oh, what major? What's your major?
Yep. What's your major?
Where are you from? Exactly. Those are the
icebreakers.
Yeah, it's so funny. And I always ask now, I'm like, oh, what do you want to do with that? Because I'm genuinely interested.
Yes.
But also, it's kind of a deeper question, potentially, and it kind of gets the conversation going, too.
I love that question.
Yeah. I also just want to acknowledge, too, so thinking about when you first got here, that was 3 years ago, and how much you've grown since. I mean, you come from, oh, I'm nervous, I'm the only one, to student body president, where a lot of people know who you are. Like, that's a pretty big difference. And I just want to acknowledge the skills that you've developed and the confidence probably as well.
Thank you.
In that. And any student that's listening to this, like, you can do it too.
Yeah, definitely.
And it takes practice, and you failed. I'm sure you failed.
Oh, yes. I probably failed more times than I've succeeded, even in this role as student body president, but... Yeah, overall as a student, like, that's part of it. Like, that's what college is for, to learn and grow, and to, like, this is a safe place to fail at. You know, this is why we're here, and regardless of your major, or the reason why, like, yeah, your concentration, like, university is for learning and growing.
Yeah.
So.
Say it again.
It's okay to fail.
Yeah.
We're, you know, in general, in life, like, we're going to fail, and that's part of it. Like, if we don't go through failure, we'll never know what success looks like. You know, we'll never get to where we want to be. Like, if we just stay comfortable being in a place where there's no failure. So we need that.
So good. Well, I think I'm going to ask the last question, just so I don't take up all of your time today.
Definitely fine. I'm enjoying this conversation.
Me too. Okay, so what is one or two pieces of advice or things that you wish that you would have known in your time in college that you would really want any student to listen to this to do or think about or not do? I don't know.
Yeah. I think I would definitely encourage students to, like we talked about earlier, if you can get involved, find out whatever, you know, if you think of probably your top five favorite hobbies, you, depending on where you go, you probably could find at least, you know, two or three of those hobbies somewhere on campus in the form of a club or organization, or maybe just a group of people who loves to do it on campus or in the community. I would definitely recommend getting involved on campus if you can. That would definitely have benefits for you. enjoying the university or the college, wherever you're going in general. And also it would have benefits for you, maybe in your academic success, of just wanting to be a more engaged student and just enjoying this experience overall. I would also encourage you to take advantage of your resources. I think so many times we can have resources on campus that we don't even know about. And, you know, they can have such a just a positive impact on us, and they can make life a lot easier, even in job searches right now. You know, I don't know about maybe people listening, but here at our university, we have like the Career Services Center, where they will help us with our resumes, help us doing mock phone calls and phone interviews. They will even help you, like, you know, find jobs and employers who are looking for students right out of college. And, you know, obviously that I haven't found a job yet, but you know, that and, you know, I guess it kind of depends, because like I'm going out of state and they have a lot more connections here in Colorado.
There's so many variables.
Yeah, many variables, but utilize the resources. And even outside of like looking for a job, like the resources on campus that help you just feel like you belong at your school. Maybe that's in a cultural or resource center, or maybe it's in a club or org like we talked about, or maybe it's in a campus job. There are so many ways to just utilize resources at your school.
Yeah, those are great. So I kind of want to ask you so many more questions.
Go ahead if you need to.
Well, what is one experience, like a challenge that you had while you've been in college, and how did you overcome it?
So I actually did a speech about this the other day, and it's going to sound contradictory, but so my biggest fear has always been public speaking. And even as the role of student body president, that is something that, like, literally I will get anxiety about having to speak in front of groups and speak on a stage, and to the point of, like, I've turned down speaking engagements because, like, not because I didn't want to do it, but just because, like, they overwhelmed me. Mm-hmm. And a couple weeks ago, like, I gave a speech at our College of Humanities and Social Sciences Recognition Award ceremony. Even in that, like, a week before I had to give that speech, like, I was barely eating because, like, I was so freaked out about it.
Yeah.
But a couple years ago, I started reading a book called The Art of Public Speaking by Dale Carnegie. And I didn't even, like, make it past the first chapter because right away, the author used a metaphor. And I think this can be applied to any, like, fear or weakness. He said, a book may give you excellent suggestions on how best to conduct yourself in the water, but sooner or later, you must get wet, perhaps, and you will strangle or be half scared today or half scared to death. There are a great many wetless bathing suits worn at the seashore, but no one ever learns to swim in them. And, like, that just really resonated with me because, like, here he's saying that, like, you can read all the books in the world you want about swimming, but unless you get in the water and start paddling, like, you'll never learn how to swim. And, you know, I started taking on this fear of, like, public speaking. And, like I said earlier, I failed so many times. And, you know, that's part of it. And through my failures, I've learned that, like, I've gotten better. I've gotten more comfortable getting on the stage and getting in front of people, and I've gotten more confident. And, like, yeah, I still struggle with public speaking, but, like, the more and more I face that fear as opposed to, like, running from it, like, I've gotten stronger at it and I've gotten more comfortable and not as afraid. And it's, like, it's something I'm still working through today, but, like, that's something I've definitely gotten to do here at UNC. Yeah, I'm glad I've gotten to do that here at this university, to, like, take all my fears and weaknesses. And, you know, it's been such a safe place to do it at here,
yeah,
even through the failures.
Yeah, and I think a lot of students, and I was definitely guilty of this when I was an undergrad and even probably my master's degree, but you think that you're not good at something, mm-hmm, so you just
run from it.
You're just not good at it.
Yeah.
So, hey, I'm just not good at public speaking. Public speaking is a skill, which mm-hmm means that you can develop it.
Right.
And if you don't do it, you're not going to develop it. But if you do and you put yourself out there, you actually can. So if you really want to learn, you can. It's just how much time and energy,
exactly,
are you willing to invest in that?
Exactly.
But it is scary.
It is scary. And, you know, it's like people always say, I've always heard, oh, you know, you can do anything you put your mind to. And I just thought to myself, like, you know, like, whatever. Like, you just saying that to try to make me, like, be confident or whatever. But, like, it's so true. Like, literally, you just said it. Like, if you're willing to put in the time and effort into it, like, you can do it, like, whatever it is. Like, you can learn whatever, whether that's being a, like, professional basketball player, soccer player, whatever. You can get there if you want to be there. You just have to be willing to put in the time and effort. And maybe sometimes you have to put in more time and effort than someone else. But, like, you can do whatever you want to do if you really put in the time and effort. And sometimes we're not always able to, but like, and maybe that's not it. Maybe that's not where we want to devote our time, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. Like, you'll figure that out.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I think that that's a great place to leave it. So thank you so much.
You are amazing. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed this.
Thank you so much for listening to the College Life Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe so you don't miss another episode, and share it with another high school student or college student who might benefit from these topics. And also, to stay in touch, you can follow me on Instagram at The College Life Coach. I would love to connect with you, and I hope that you have an excellent week.